Welcome to another episode of the Untangling Web3 podcast. If you hadn't heard, AI is actually booming right now. And surprise, surprise, that's what we're going to be talking about today. If you'd asked someone 5 to 10 years ago, they probably wouldn't have been able to tell you that AI would have been so impactful on the arts specifically. And that's what we're going to talk about, is how impactful it's been for the creative industry, both in a negative way, replacing jobs, but also in a positive way, lowering the barrier to entry. So it's not all doom and gloom, and there is a lot of things to be hopeful for. So yeah, let's kick this one off. Let's see how AI is impacting the arts today.
This is something that is close to a lot of people's hearts. And I think when people are, you know, everyone's kind of slightly worried in the back of their minds, at least, about AI coming for our jobs, right? And I think nowhere is that more prevalent than in the creative industries, where we've seen already lots of use of AI, which we'll kind of get into some specific examples. But that's an area where, you know, from the early days of the AI boom, you know, you see Midjourney creating images, things like OpenAI being able to generate text, you know, write scripts for you, for example. So yeah, I think there's lots of ways in which this tech can be used for good and for ill for the creative industry. So yeah, why don't we start, as you said, with one that's a little bit closer to home and look at how it's affecting the podcast industry in particular.
Yeah, I think like you're right. Like, my background is in robotics, and I think 30 to 40 years ago, people were having a similar kind of conversation to what we're having around AI right now, is, oh my God, this is going to disrupt, you know, manufacturing, labor, all this kind of stuff. How are people going to transition? And that was really like the main kind of thought process around the world, was that it was going to be the white collar jobs. No, wrong one. It was going to be the blue collar jobs that were going to be most disrupted by automation, right? And it's only been the last, you know, few years now, with the kind of the advent of ChatGPT and people understanding how disruptive and how easy to use AI can be, that this has really started to come for white collar jobs, started to come for, you know, the what we'd consider professional jobs. And then like the last bastion in a lot of people's minds that would be safe from automation, AI, all these things, was the arts. That was kind of like, you know, when you kind of think of this utopian future, you'd say, well, humans, you know, we're not so good at the manufacturing anymore. Robots can do that. We're not so good at the, you know, the kind of the white collar jobs, you know, doing accounting, creating scripts, all this kind of stuff. We're going to be good at the arts. That's what we're all going to do. That's our last endeavor. We just do podcasts or write scripts and all this kind of generate, you know, mosaics. But now we're starting to see that AI can actually do that as well. And it's actually starting to replace that field. So it's becoming more and more interesting. And like the space that we are better at AI at is becoming smaller and smaller. And, you know, like Jack said, we're going to be talking about podcasts. This is mine and Jack's artistic endeavor. And now we've found that there's an AI replacement that actually does it much better than we can. And that's quite concerning. So let's jump into Notebook LLM.
Yeah, exactly. This is something that definitely scared me a little bit when I was when I first came across it. So this is from Google, right? Notebook LLM. And I think this has been kind of doing the rounds recently. It's gone very viral. Is essentially, from what I can see, is it lets you generate a podcast from any kind of input media, so like a text document, for example, and it creates a full audio podcast with speakers, right? So AI generated speakers. So it kind of puts together a few different things, right? It's the generative AI for, you know, text to something else models, and then it has these really super realistic AI hosts, right, of the podcast that can make virtually anything interesting. So this is why it's a little bit close to our hearts, is because, you know, 18 months ago we start this podcast, we think, you know, if anyone can make Web3 interesting, maybe it'll be us. And then actually come along these AI voices that you can toggle and change and things. They actually, if anything, doing a little bit of a better job in some cases. So yeah, it's a little bit scary, right?
Yeah, I mean, I found out about this in work. Like, some of the people I work with know about my podcast. They sometimes listen, very few of them maybe. And someone just like added me in the general conversation saying, Alec, have you seen this? Your podcast's over. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? And I went on to it. I was like, no way. Played around with it for a little bit. And was like, this is incredible. Like, scary, obviously. I think the big thing is, there's been these kind of voiceover styles you put into a script and they read them out. You know, think of Siri style and all this kind of stuff for quite a while. But the kind of the nuance around being able to make something conversational, like they're putting in. So an example I saw that I put in was, you put in the Bitcoin white paper, right? Very techie, very heavy. Not many people are reading from top to bottom apart from Jack, who's got it on his wall. And they turn it into a very light-hearted conversation that's very interesting. There's lots of jokes, lots of gags. Like they just nail it down. It's so enjoyable that you actually really can't tell the difference between that and like a top tier podcast. So as soon as I did this, I was like, what the hell? This is our job's over. I thought this would be our last endeavor. But should I play a little bit from it?
Yeah, go on. Give everyone at home a taste of how much better this could be.
The one and only.
Yeah, the document that started it all, right?
Pretty much.
I mean, everybody knows about Bitcoin now, but I'm curious how many people have actually gone back and read the original white paper written by the mysterious Satoshi Nakamoto. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to unpack the core ideas
directly from the source,
figure out, you know, what problem Bitcoin was trying to solve, and see how this whole thing is supposed to work. And don't worry, we're going to break down all the technical stuff so you can really grasp the brilliance of this thing.
Yeah, it's really incredible how this paper, it's not even that long, but it really changed how we think about money, about tech.
It really did. So the white paper jumps right in.
Okay.
And it starts by laying out a problem that probably feels familiar to a lot of people, which is that, you know, online transactions always rely on a middleman. You know, banks, payment processors, those guys.
Right. Always rely.
Damn. Like, it's so good, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we used to joke on the podcast, especially in the early days, that I was a bit robotic and that I was a bit like an AI. You know, this is back when ChatGPT first came out and was only, you know, GPT-3 and things like that. And we used to joke that I could sometimes, you know, if I wasn't on the ball, I would come across a little bit like an AI model and not have the social cues and things. And now, wow, I mean, they're doing arguably a better job, even when I'm trying my hardest, right? So it's one thing that you definitely note there is that it's scaled that uncanny valley. So if anyone hasn't heard of that effect, it's when uncanny valley is, you know, when something is sufficiently close to human, but it's not quite good enough that it gives you this strange effect, right? It feels wrong. And to me, now these have got so advanced that I don't have that when I listen. It does just sound genuinely like you're listening to two highly experienced, skilled podcasters.
Yeah. And the thing there is like, the difference between what's been inputted, which is a very technical, blunt, to the point paper, very like purely academic paper, and what they're producing there, I even said there, like what the AI algorithm, sorry, is producing there is just miles apart. Like the fact that they're breaking it down, making it easy to understand, bringing you in. There's like, I thought this was a very kind of intuitive human only skill to do that, to kind of connect with people and to create empathy, whatever it is. But clearly they've done that. I put the Bitcoin white paper in, nothing else. And 30 seconds later, they have a 15 minute podcast that goes into it. And there's several jokes. It's funny. It's engaging. And most importantly, it's quite scary because this might be the end of the podcast. But we've kind of said that, we talk about it often, that podcasts are the new go-to medium, new go-to media, because they're much more engaging. People want to connect and they feel like podcasts are a way to do that, where they connect with the individual, or, well, they hope they're connecting with us anyway, and also learn something. But, you know, if that's going to be automated, what's the point? No, I'm joking.
Yeah. And something I find interesting about Notebook LLM specifically is that when we'll talk about some of the other ways that Gen AI is affecting creative industries, I think in lots of those cases, there's almost a direct competition or replacement competition for people doing these things. I think it's slightly different with Notebook LLM because I think it's a completely different model where people will just be generating their own media for themselves, right? It's like, it's not like there's a new podcaster competing with us and trying to gain market share. It's almost reducing the market size overall, because people can just go and generate a podcast about something they're interested in. So it's a slightly different way of looking at it, which is, again, interesting just because of that inversion, right? The idea of people self-curating content and being able to, you know, find out things for themselves, much the way people use ChatGPT now, rather than having podcasters like you and I, Alec, deciding, you know, what do we think is interesting? And then, you know, that might not always be interesting for everyone episode to episode. So yeah, it's interesting how that's going to change the industry, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked there about our opinion, our putting our subjectivity and like our personality into things, whatever small personality we have. And I saw that there's a few AI experts that are saying that one of the last things that, you know, humanity will be able to latch onto that won't be, you know, AI won't be able to take over very easily was taste. So it's still that the ability to have an opinion that maybe is not the mainstream, that's slightly out there, slightly different. And that's one of the last things that kind of will define us as human. So maybe our, you know, slightly weird style is a taste in some sense of the word, and we can hold on to that. But it's not all doom and gloom for podcasters. Like that you said, that might, you know, take up some of the small market share that we're after. But there are a lot of tools out there that actually do help podcasters. So one of the ones that we use, or Jack uses quite regularly, is Descript. So this is like a kind of a production tool, basically, where it can like auto filter out pauses, gaps. You know, we have a hell of a lot of issues with our podcast. If it wasn't for the Jack and Descript, I think it would be like 10 times worse.
Yeah, that it's really interesting. So when we first started the podcast, you know, a little bit of behind the scenes here, but I did all the editing very manually, doing all the cuts manually and things like that, and then stumbled across Descript as an example of one of these platforms for editing. And it uses AI in so many different ways, whether it's from, you know, just the pure transcribing, so going from video input that we're giving it to text, and it lets you edit the text directly, which is kind of amazing and a lifesaver. But then I noticed there were some really powerful features that I haven't had to use all that often, but, you know, things like replacing audio. So when one of our Wi-Fi cuts out or something and you miss a word, you can actually have one of us say that word, because, you know, we don't want to go back and re-record the whole episode, right? Just to get this one word. And what it does is it builds an AI model based on our voices, right? So once or twice in the history of the podcast, you will have heard one of us say a word that actually was based on an AI model of us, which is amazing. And you would never notice, you know, I mean, sometimes, okay, it takes a couple of generations to get it right, but normally it's not too hard to find one. So yeah, that kind of thing is impressive. You've also got like the eye tracking stuff. Okay, we don't actually use that feature, but it's kind of spooky to see how good it is to make sure you're actually, you know, looking towards the camera and not kind of looking around the room like sometimes we do. But yeah, it's so powerful.
You reckon we have to have a thing where it's like, tell the difference between you, real you speaking, and you, AI you speaking, and see if like have a little capture style model and see if people can tell the difference.
But like a Web3 Turing test.
It's funny, this stuff, but like it kind of gets into the realm, which is obviously something that we're constantly talking about when we talk on the topic of AI, is authenticity, originality, and, you know, copyright and all this kind of stuff. If it can duplicate our voices in such a way that you can't tell the difference, like, you know, when I call Santander, their new thing on the banking is like, you know, you're saying like a sentence and that proves who you are. Our voice is everywhere. Like, obviously that would be the easiest thing to spoof in the world. And like the facial stuff is getting more and more apt. Like you're saying, the eye placement, you can start to put avatars on there. People might have seen with the Apple Vision Pro and stuff. Like, it's going to be really tricky to start to distinguish people in like the digital space. We started as a Web3 project. We are a Web3 project. And I think more and more, this is kind of getting into the realm of authenticity. And we're going to need blockchain solutions to underpin this stuff to actually make it safe, secure, and guarantee that someone is who they say they are.
Yeah, for all the good use cases of this, and, you know, aside from whether the fact that's going to replace people's jobs, it will, like any technology, can be used for good or ill, right? And people are, you know, on one hand, they'll say this is really great for this kind of text to audio and AI voice based tools you have. That's great for doing like customer service bots over the phone, right? So if people can get the same information based on an internal knowledge base that you train it on, that's going to actually save a lot of time. It's going to be able to serve more people rather than having to wait on a phone for an hour to get to a real person. But then, yeah, you have all these other things where you're going to have super realistic scam calling. It's always, you know, it's like when they invented the car that helped the cops and the robbers, right? So it's one of those things. And just on, you know, on the replacement point you mentioned, I think it is important, you know, to reinforce that idea of taste, right? I think that for me, when I hear you say about taste being the last bastion of, you know, what will be unique and worthwhile in the creative industry, that makes me worry more about our podcast in general, because we're quite informative, right? I think we tend to make things quite informative, and that's where things like Notebook LLM will be very successful, because they're for getting information. Whereas, you know, the talk tours, those kind of podcasts of the world where you're going there for the individual, for the person, I think they're the ones that'll be the least affected. So yeah, I don't think we're out the woods potentially, but who knows?
Yeah, I do wonder. I think, like, on the topic of copywriting, if there will be some infringement issues that will kind of limit the ability for these algorithms to just kind of go completely mainstream right? Like, it's very hard for a human to say, you know, you, this opinion that you have is copyright. What's in your brain is copyright, all this kind of stuff. But it's very easy with an algorithm, say, I put in this paper exactly, this is how it's built. Like, you are built on my opinions. If I make a Joe Rogan style podcast tomorrow that is just built on Joe Rogan, like, there's an issue there. But yeah, let's see what happens. Maybe we need to become a bit more kind of influency KOL style, start to have more strong opinions and be less informative, sell our souls.
Yeah, I think we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure we'll have the most success for it, but yeah. So then moving on from the audio medium into kind of visual arts, right, and things to do with photo and image generation. I think this is, you know, also one of the first places people saw, as we mentioned, AI being used. Midjourney was one of the big breakout examples. It was probably, I think I actually used Midjourney before I used ChatGPT, because I was really interested in, you know, seeing it goes viral very easily, right? You see the images that people have made, you go, wow, what can I do with this? So that was one of my first touch points. And then, you know, we saw very quickly with the rise in 2022, 2023, the big dogs in the kind of visual arts world, like the creative studios, Adobe, for example, were some of the fastest to integrate these AI components and enhancements to their core product, right? You know, even things like Canva that we use a lot also embeds this now. So that's really taken off, I think, in the kind of visual medium of creatives.
Yeah, I remember using these early on and they were kind of quite cutesy, I guess. Like, the images were very cartoony. You could kind of see like where the inspiration came from. If you were to Google the exact same thing that you're asking for from the prompt on the actual AI algorithm, it would look kind of similar. They would very much like copy paste with a bit of editing in between. But they're so advanced now. Some of like the hyper real human like images that they create are indistinguishable sometimes from reality. It really is mind boggling, like how easy it is to use these things. And again, there's an authenticity thing. Are they going to replace artists? But we use it on the podcast and it really does lower the barrier to entry for us to just spin up content, have like thumbnails very quickly without us having to give too much of our soul. Like, neither of us are particularly artistic, but we don't have to be. We just need to put a sentence in. It adds a lot of value to a lot of things you're creating. I think one of the things, the jumps that I've really seen in the last like few months on this, is the hardware that's pushing into this space. Like, every new phone, every new laptop is now AI enabled. They have like an AI powered GPU, and the whole point of that is to just enable AI processes on that device. And the most obvious thing they push for in a lot of this stuff is for the images, be it like the Adobe style editing stuff where I can, you know, start to create a picture and say, you know, make this background Mordor or something like that instead of the pretty landscape I have. Or it's on your camera, you take a photo. Some of the things that you see demoed quite a lot is you take two photos, and if some people are blinking in one and not blinking in the other, then you have one photo of no one blinking. Or one I've seen recently, you take a photo with three friends, the fourth friend takes the photo, then they swap around, and then they can merge those two images together. It seems really gimmicky, but this is kind of like a lot of these devices slowly dipping their toe into this, and all the new phones are now, you know, Samsung 24 Plus AI, you know, plus or something like that. It's kind of a bit gimmicky, but also it's kind of the new norm.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because I think the hardware angle is actually fascinating, because it's been something that's been going on for ages. If you look back at Apple releases for the last kind of 5, 6, 7 years, they have all, you know, the whole meme about Apple iPhones kind of tailing off because they're so good and you can't do much in each release. Well, they started really pushing the computational engines, the photographic computation they do, so that, you know, you're not actually getting more out of the camera, the lenses themselves, because they're already like 40 megapixels or something. You know, you can't get much more resolution than that. But this computational layer on top was being really pushed for a long time. So the hardware has been worked on. But now with AI being, you know, the big buzzword now, then, yeah, everything's trying to keep pace with that. One other thing I want to say about the visual arts is it's an area where I think it can become quite uncomfortable very quickly for me. So as you said, we use it for the podcast, for, you know, generating themed backgrounds for each episode, so you can see a different theme in it, but it's not like a core thing. When you get to the kind of face swapping and the perfect image stuff, that I find a little bit kind of unnerving, right? I think there's the advert you see for, is it the Google Pixel with the England football team, and you have them, you know, literally changing their whole facial angle or having a better profile picture. And I find it a little bit, I don't like that lack of authenticity that it's bringing into the things, even though, you know, millions of people are going to use it. It does make me a little bit worried as well.
Yeah. And I think it's like a lot of the negatives that we have from social media being so pervasive in our daily lives, just on steroids, basically. You know, social media, you see the 0.0001% best of someone's life. So you're like, oh my God, is this what everyone's life is like? Should my life be as perfect as that? And now we're taking it to this extreme where it's like, you no longer have blemishes. There's no longer errors in photos. Like everything is just perfect. It's kind of like, that's not real. It's so fake that kind of going past what is, you know, simulating reality and simulating something that's actually better than reality, which is I don't really like as well. I can see why this is an issue. But yeah, it's quite scary. I think another thing on the hardware is, like you say, there's so much focus on just increasing the computational capacity. And I think that is going to align perfectly with, you know, this new idea of self-sovereign AI models, where rather than we have a server that's run by a Google style scenario offshore somewhere or something like that, that takes all the data and spits it out, I could have a personalized model that is run on my device that, you know, is completely custom to me. The data only goes there, doesn't feed anything else. And it's kind of like a Web3 version of AI. And we had a whole conversation about this with Alex Kahana and Heather Leigh Flannery a few months ago. So yeah, check that out if you're a bit interested in self-sovereign AI. But yeah, lots to do there. I think the next one, so everyone's kind of familiar with, you know, these chat prompts making images, but some of the things that they're getting more advanced in is music and film production. I think you spoke when we first talked about this stuff, and you spoke about like making songs with Snoop Dogg style of like some kind of classical music, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah. I mean, this is probably was around the start of the podcast time, right? About a year and a half ago. And there were all these things on social media, right? Of people training, you know, models based on people's voices. I know Kanye West one was doing the rounds and they got super popular. But there are some kind of specific examples that have happened more recently that I think I'd like us to get into as well. But yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah. So one that I've used is Amper Music. Do you want my friend, as we are on a long road trip and got clearly very bored, was like, do you want me to make you a song with some like details on you? So we put it into this this Amper Music and they created a little song about my life. Do you want to hear it, Jack?
Oh really? Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, is it going to depress our audience, or is this a good idea?
No, I don't know. It's quite funny. I think it's quite funny. Let's have a go.
He's climbing high with Loki by his side, and the mountains to the sky, dungeons and dragons, nerd shows on screen, Alex living big. In his gym fuel dream.
To the chorus.
Alec Burns. He's a crypto boy. Drives a van. But he's living with joy.
No more of that. What do you think of that?
Where do I start? I mean, I think you do quite a good job of hiding your nerdiness sometimes, but this is not one of those times. You know, we recently, you know, got to the milestone of 50,000 subscribers on YouTube. I think we may have just lost about 45,000 of those. So.
Well, you didn't like it. I mean, it's country. I think everyone says that country is the simplest music to replicate, but that was, again, generating like 10 to 15 seconds or something like that. And I know it's not to your particular taste, but I'm a big country bumpkin and I like it. Like, it's just, it's crazy how easy it is for these algorithms to make like very melodic, you know, simple but enjoyable songs, like with just a couple of prompts. Like, I don't know, it's again quite scary.
Yeah, and you know, all jokes aside, it's hugely impressive. I mean, I'd still rather hear you sing the song, to be honest, but it's impressive that it can generate it, especially I think the musical element, because again, to talk about our own experience, when we started the podcast, we thought, well, we need a jingle, every podcast needs a jingle. And we were completely stuck on how to do it, right? We needed to get someone else, a friend, to help us out and do it. But now you have these tools that could help someone who doesn't have that friend in their lives to kind of, you know, again, reduce that barrier to entry. And there's a really interesting example that I'd like to just, you know, highlight here on the music industry. So basically, there's a couple of things that went on, but around, I think around June 2023, so Grimes, who is now the ex-wife, I believe, of Elon Musk, and she's also a music artist, kind of famously. So she became pretty much the first person to open source her voice. So she basically allowed this AI model to be made of her voice. I think it's called elf.tech. And anyone can use that voice now in songs they make. With a kind of royalty split. I think it's like a 50-50 royalty split between Grimes and whichever artist uses it. So that was one thing. And then based on that, so an artist that I have kind of liked for a long, long time called Blau. It's spelled 3 Lau, L-A-U, but I've always said it like that. But I think it's actually pronounced Blau. And they did something really, really interesting, right? So they created the first kind of AI x AI song. So they trained a model for the beats and the melody side, because it's kind of he's an electronic artist who makes kind of D&B electronic style music. So he created the beats for this track using a model trained on his own library of music, stuff he'd made before, stuff he hadn't, you know, released before necessarily, and then used that for the beats in the backing track, and then used the Grimes AI model for the vocals. And I actually came across this song organically first time, so I didn't know it was an AI song. I was like, oh, amazing, Blau's got a new song. I listened to it. I loved it. And then I found out this whole backstory, and now that he's, you know, creating a platform around this to do royalty sharing and generate music and tokenize the royalties. But it got me thinking, because have you ever had that experience of thinking, I love this artist, I love this music, especially maybe around electronic stuff. And I thought, I wish I could just have more music like this, right? And not exactly, in the way that Spotify recommends similar music, but I want new music that's like this, right? That I haven't heard before. So I think it's fun. It's really fascinating that you could do that now.
Yeah, like I would say, I'm not really that surprised now with everything that's happening that that's possible. I remember like listening to a TED talk, maybe a few years ago now. And the point was that music is very mathematical, which I didn't know. I'm not very musical, but it's very mathematical. Like that certain notes harmonize, and the way that certain things go together is it's very like, yeah, it's very easy to simulate with equations and very easy to know, you know, through a function, basically, what's going to sound nice in advance and what won't. And there's this company built around it where we started to have, like, I think it was around the Ed Sheeran debate and all this kind of stuff, where people were infringing on other songs and saying they were too similar and trying to copyright melodies and songs and note combinations and all this kind of stuff. And this company's whole premise was, actually, there's only so many melodies that go together, so many note combinations that sound nice that can ever exist. So their point was, because it's such a limited space and time goes on forever and there's more artists, like, you shouldn't be able to copyright these things because there's only so many combinations. So they basically created this algorithm that would go through and get every single good harmony possible, every good single good melody, and try and copyright the whole thing so they could open source it and say any artist's allowed to use these and no one's allowed to infringe on this, because this is, you know, the limited search space available. So yeah, I'm not surprised that they can do this and like kind of say, this is the pattern I see from this person's melodies, let's mix it around slightly and recreate it. Because there's so many times now when I hear songs, I'm like, oh, that kind of reminds me of this song, and this kind of reminds me of that song, and there's obviously a bit of inspiration there. But it is cool, the ability to kind of just say, I like these 5 songs, create a song that's the best bits of all of them. But yeah, I think it's very smart by these two people to jump in and say, you can create any song and I take 50% royalties. Like, that's a pyramid scheme if ever I heard one.
Well, yeah, when you say music being mathematical, you make me think of, just as a side note, you know, Tenet, the Chris Nolan film. Really interesting. I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, Ludwig Göransson's score, he's got all these palindromes, right, in the music that can be played backwards and forwards. So cool. But, you know, it was, I agree, it's kind of one of the things music you should be expecting, the mathematical stuff to be able to replicate it and manipulate it in these ways. But for me, it was a kind of watershed moment, because it was the first time I'd enjoyed a piece of media that was fully AI generated or kind of near fully AI generated. And it had been a completely seamless experience, right? It was as if it had come from the artist itself, which kind of, and the fact that I didn't even know first time, it really genuinely kind of shook me. I was thinking about it for days, right? It was one of those moments where, have we reached the singularity of music, maybe potentially? So,
yeah, that is quite scary. I think everyone's going to have that experience soon. And maybe like people that are not in the space will have it more readily because they won't be expecting it. But where we first interact with some kind of AI and don't realize. I mean, there's the boring AIs that are underneath the hood that, you know, the search algorithms and optimization, all that kind of stuff. But when something mimicking a human so much so, and you can't tell, like a song or an artist, I think one of the big ones that's related to all this is obviously filmmaking and animation and all this kind of stuff. That's the big area that's kind of come up for debate. And, you know, it's very relevant to the Grimes stuff because there is this whole writers kind of debacle where they were saying that they were worried that, you know, production agencies were trying to record their identity, trying to record them in certain scenes, get them to play script, and then open source them so they could just reuse that actor, you know, in perpetuity forever and put them into whatever film, make them say whatever script. And they were like, no, this will end our careers, end our profession. This went on for a year or 2 years or something absolutely crazy. But I can understand why. Like, even the animations I'm seeing online on Twitter through like Sora or Runway, especially, I've seen a lot through Runway and Synthesia, the other ones you've kind of heard about. They are incredible now. They're getting so realistic, like so intuitive. Like, it just looks like someone has spent 2 years on these animations and this, but it's just a prompt again, and it's made in like minutes or something like this. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's been happening for a long time again, you know, as with a lot of these things. So we've seen a lot of controversy around this, you know, people like Grand Moff Tarkin, right, in the Star Wars franchise. That was one of the first times that people had seen a fully kind of AI rendered, or I'm not even sure if it was AI, it was just an artificial version of a person, you know, who was no longer around and then had died.
Oh yeah,
put back into a film. And now we're seeing it all the time, right? It's happened in Star Wars, happened in the Aliens franchise, and how you manage the rights of someone's likeness, you know, especially as you get older and older, and you know, the rights might pass through generations, and then it becomes someone else's decision. You know, that's a scary thought, that you could not consent to it while you're alive, but someone, one of your grandkids or something, could decide to open source your likeness or something like that. It's a very scary thing. But yeah, it's happening, right? That's the headline here. All these tools are making it a lot easier now, even than when it first happened 8-9 years ago now. It's the barrier to entry to that is all reduced a lot. And you mentioned Sora. That's generating new video content from scratch, or Runway, as you said, generating new stuff from scratch. It's, you know, it's really mind-boggling how good it is. And now you're seeing, have you seen the memes and stuff? Like, when they've got new versions of memes, right, which used to be static images that everyone knows, that have been around for 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And now they're kind of morphing into each other. They're changing elements. It's very entertaining and impressive. But again, like, opens up a whole Pandora's box of things to worry about potentially.
Yeah, they are very entertaining. I saw the CEO of Runway actually saying that he predicts that within a year or 2 years, there'll be an Oscar award for an entirely AI generated and produced movie, which is a bit bonkers. Like, I don't know how the arts industry would feel about that, given everything with the writer's strike, but it is mind boggling. But some of these things I've seen, just pure ads on this stuff, where it's been like a 3-minute sequence that's been made just advertising a film, that's every single part from conception to production to, you know, everything after, has been generated by AI, and they are incredible. Like, they are like kind of Dune 2 style levels of production, and it looks hyper real, and I'm like, I want to watch that film. Like, it is scary. And I think in my mind, I don't really feel uncomfortable like watching these films. It's not, because I think we're kind of used to films not always portraying humans, right? Like animations, all this kind of stuff where it's just voiceovers and that. So I don't think that's a bigger step to say, you know, we're just taking the human voice out of this animation. But yeah, it I don't know what it means for the industry itself. Like, I imagine there'll be kind of more credence given to the theater and people going to live performances. Maybe that will be the thing. But even when you think about like ABBA Voyage, which is this kind of VR hologram style thing where, you know, ABBA basically are dancing around stage as holograms doing this whole concert. Is that going to be the future of like even live theater? Like, I know that stuff costs a lot, but everyone that's been to it said it's one of the most incredible performances they've ever seen. So I don't even know what it's for live theater.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That gives me the same feeling that the perfect photo stuff gives me, the ABBA Voyage. Like, even if it's great, I haven't seen it, but it makes me slightly scared. I think it was happened with Tupac as well, right? Like, years and years ago, before all this. But yeah, again, it's demonstrating huge potential. And I don't know about the Oscars one, because I think the Oscars like to be very traditional, and I think they'll maybe be the last to honor this stuff, but maybe a Golden Globe or something, I could definitely see. And, you know, on the advertising side and stuff as well, I think there's a really, really interesting to use Marvel as a case study, because they are one of the biggest, you know, brands franchises in cinema right now. I mean, they're kind of going off the board a little bit, but they're still one of the biggest names out there. And they've run into a couple of problems around this, right? So two to name in, you know, 2023, there was the Secret Invasion TV series, the one on Disney Plus. And they actually, so at this point, they were using AI in a very open way. So they said, look, guys, we've made title credits using AI. How cool is this? And they got a huge backlash for that because they were like, well, this is work that should have gone to, you know, actual artists. And especially because Marvel is, you know, building stuff around comic book IP. And comic books are, you know, famously hand-drawn, painstakingly done. Mm-hmm. You know, animation has always been a painstakingly hand-drawn thing in the past as well. People got very angry about that and they faced a lot of backlash. And then, you know, literally last month, so, you know, a year and a bit into the future after that. Now, it seems like they're still using AI, people are pointing out, but they're hiding it now. So they're trying to get away with it. So I don't know if you saw this, but the Thunderbolts movie that's coming out early next year, people spotted that there was a character in the poster with five fingers. So five digits and a thumb basically on their hand. And they were like, they're doing it again. They're using generative AI to make their posters. That's taking work from someone else, and we've spotted you, right? But it's interesting that they're still trying to do it, maybe to cut costs, but, you know, they're trying to hide it now.
I mean, that's like a really poor old school AI model as well. I remember like the early ones when we were using it to create images where you like on the surface at a high level look great, and then when you zoom in, like people would have three eyes or two teeth and 10 fingers, and you'd be like this, but you didn't see immediately. You'd look back and be like, this is some, there's something weird about this photo, but I don't know what. You'd zoom in and be like, oh my God, this is truly terrifying. Like, there's some AI images that we use to generate that would haunt my dreams afterwards.
Well, that's the uncanny valley thing again, right? Yeah, these older models. I remember one in particular, you know, back to behind the scenes. There was one we did for our end of year episode where we were predicting what was going to happen this year in 2024. And I was trying to do one where we were both crowded around a crystal ball, and it just could not do one where we both had a hand with five fingers, right? Four fingers and a thumb on it. It just couldn't do it. It was like those optical illusions where, you know, is it four legs or five legs kind of thing. It was horrible, and I was getting creeped out by it. But yeah, it's come a long way since then.
I saw one earlier. One of my friends got it when they were on the website, and I think it was Christmas special or something like this, and I didn't even notice, but there was like, it was both of us in like Christmas outfits or something, and then in the background there was two like little elf children or something, and I actually didn't notice them at first, and they were zoomed in the bottom right corner, and I looked there, I was like, I didn't see those before. It looks really creepy. But yeah, we need to stand to check this a bit better, maybe get a real artist to start doing this stuff.
Well, and they're definitely not perfect, right? That's something we should also mention. They aren't perfect yet, or at least a lot of the ones that us consumers can use. You know, a lot of the time I'll generate an image for one of our backgrounds and I'll think, this is perfect, this is exactly what I want, but there's something wrong. Or it's added in a little extra icon somewhere that I just really don't want, and I have to crop it. Or, you know, sometimes I end up just going with it because I try and get a better one and it doesn't get better than the original, even though it has that blemish. So yeah, it's still a bit of a pain at times to use, but it's a lot better than us trying to, you know, to hand draw it, because we're not professionals and that kind of stuff.
And this is one of the things about this stuff is like, it doesn't really understand what it's doing. And that's quite like a philosophical thing to say, like, what is understanding? But when you ask it to do something like create an image of me and Jack in a Christmas setting, what it does to achieve that is, rather than like just drawing it, it tries it down into the kind of component patterns of that request. And it's kind of assembling these component patterns and filtering it through to create something in the end. So to then say something like, okay, this thing has five fingers, if it's basing it on these underlying, quite tricky for then to edit, but this is something that is really starting to improve. And even like ChatGPT, the models now, you can have a specific edit for an image to say, okay, this little part here is actually wrong, can you do it? And they are getting much better at this stuff. They're really starting to break down what is understanding, and like, yeah, it really has improved a lot in like the past year on these things.
And when you, I think it's just really important that you highlighted the philosophical side, right? And one thing, you know, as we're coming to the end here, that goes a through line through everything else we've said, is that all of these AI generated stuff are, by definition, they are derivative, because they're all generating new things, but based on a set of inputs that we've given it, right? It's deriving new things from those inputs. and rejumbling them and making something new out of them. But ultimately, yeah, it's not necessarily, it's not thinking in the same way that we say it. Now, there's a whole other philosophical debate about, well, what do we as humans do when we create things? Aren't we just taking our inputs and our environment and spitting something out? But I think still that there's that link that is missing between what the AI is doing. And that is, again, back to the copyright question you were saying earlier, is where all that stuff gets very, very murky, right? In if this is all derivative by definition, then, you know, how the hell do we account for all this stuff in the royalties, right?
Yeah, and I think maybe we lie on different sides of the fence of this. I think that it's fine because I think humans do the exact same. We just don't understand brains well enough to actually prove that they do, importantly. But I think if you break something down so much so that it's unrecognizable from the original thing, if I break down the Mona Lisa into these patterns underneath that are so kind of like disconnected from the original, so the kind of more base and fundamental, like color goes well with this color, these two triangles look well together, then is that, and then rejumble, like you said, is that really infringing on copyright? I'm not. But then, like, there's obviously a threshold there where it's like, if it does get so complicated that the face pattern with this pattern looks so similar, you know, there is a threshold, a gray area in between. And I don't think right now that I wouldn't, on the side that I don't think AI copyrights a lot of things, but there are some things, if it's like 100% identical, then obviously there's a copy there and there's some gray area in between, but that's above our pay grade.
Yeah, I don't have a strong answer or opinion on this, right? Because again, I agree, we don't understand. I don't think we understand, most of us, enough about how the AI models are actually working and also how the human brain works to kind of come down on this hard either way. So yeah, I think the Mona Lisa of Theseus thing is also an interesting argument. Like, if I've changed all the elements in some way, is it still the same piece of art? I think that also comes into play.
Yeah, but I mean, the important thing here is it's not all doom and gloom. AI is obviously incredibly impactful on the arts right now and will continue to be. But there are some pros as well, like what we've mentioned, even for our podcast, like it really is democratizing access, lowering the barrier to entry. Like, we couldn't run this podcast very effectively without all the AI tools that we've talked about. It really does reduce costs, allow us to do things faster, allow me and Jack to concentrate on the things we enjoy, which is actually recording, planning the episodes and all this stuff, and worrying less about the production, the art and all the images that go out. But obviously there are a lot of challenges with job displacement, with authenticity, content rights, all this kind of stuff. And this is the legalese we're hoping will be addressed over the coming years, but it's obviously creating a lot of fear right now where we don't even know we'll have a podcast next year because these tools are moving so quickly and so impressive right now that it's hard to know the future of this space.
Yeah, I think that is such an important note to end on that you said there, right? That I hadn't kind of fully crystallized until you said. But yeah, it's linked to that lowering the barrier to entry for us as podcasters, okay? So you're right, we couldn't focus on the important stuff. We couldn't focus on curating what we think are the right ideas, creating episodes, kind of thinking and planning for episodes and all this stuff, because it, you know, it's incredibly time intensive. We're doing this in our spare time. If we didn't have all these tools at our disposal to make the kind of the grunt work of bringing an episode from idea to getting it on YouTube and published and everything, then yeah, we probably couldn't be doing this. So ultimately, it's the reason that the podcast exists in some ways, right?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a gateway drug in some ways, where you start using ChatGPT to help, like, formalize some of the episode content, then you're using Descript to help with production, then all of a sudden, you know, you start changing words with it, then all of a sudden Jack's ill for a couple of months, I just use Descript to do all his part and I'm recording on my own, then all of a sudden I'm like, you know, let's just automate it all. It is a slippery slope, and I can see how, like, the big companies are going down that route, and maybe it doesn't lead to a good place. But at the moment, in my mind anyway, we're in a good place where AI is mostly just enhancing a lot of the arts. But let's see where it goes. I mean, I would encourage everyone to stay ahead of the trends, because this technology is moving so quickly and it's just advancing so fast that it's really, you have no idea what's going to happen next week. But a lot of it's very exciting and enjoyable. So yeah, have fun with it. And thank you for listening, wherever you may be, and to untangle a little more of Web3. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode.
See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.